We might as well hold on to them until the end of the hearing. Okay.
The hearing is open again. We closed it briefly for the receipt of evidence that was a trade secret protected. And so, Mr. Simser, I guess I would ask if you have additional questions for your witness.
You know, the only couple of redirect items I have, Your Honor, is Mr. Johnson, you know, Mr. Armstrong was trying to get an understanding if the difference in numbers is material, and is it your opinion that the difference between your analysis and Mr. Pollich's analysis is material?
In terms of the overall carrying cost, yes.
Would it be fair to say that your testimony and his testimony agree that there's the LNRs represent a need sometime out into the future?
Yeah, 23-25 time frame, yes.
Okay. And just to clarify, based on your rebuttal testimony, you have identified a need in 2024, and Mr. Hager's supplemental rebuttal testimony with an updated LNR represents a need in 2023, correct?
Because of the change in October 2nd, right. That's correct.
All right. Nothing further.
Mr. Johnson?
No further questions, Your Honor.
Mr. Armstrong?
Nothing further.
And PSC staff?
Does your analysis include energy sales into the market in addition to what you were talking about under trade secret? Or is that the equivalent if you could sell the capacity?
Yes. The capacity credit, that's what that's for, is to monetize that excess amount of capacity.
Okay, but no energy sales?
No.
Okay.
Thank you. Any further questions from the commission? Commissioner Calk.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple, Paul. Tell me again the difference between your job and Kurt's job. You're the director of resource planning, and he's the VP of resource planning in this area. Who works for who again?
I work for Kurt.
Okay, but
he's in charge of all the Excel resource planning, the three operating companies.
Okay, is he a good boss? No, just strike that.
You're
strike
on the
that.
Road.
Strike that question.
Times you want me to say that.
All right. That's why I could have asked these questions to him, I guess, as well, but it's more of a over lunch, thinking about some different, try to look at both sides of these issues. If Xcel was in here trying to build a 1,000-megawatt coal plant, I'd be saying, yeah, do it, even though you probably don't need the 1,000 megawatts today because that's the scale. I'm just that's – so you wonder back in the day when – you've been doing this a while – when companies overbuilt because the economy is scale, how did commissions deal with it then, even though it wasn't needed right away, but that's the way it had to be built? How did you deal with it then?
Well, NSP or how did I
NSP,
deal?
Yeah.
Okay, I wasn't here back then, so I can't really speak to how they did it. So I would probably have to defer to Kurt or someone else who has
okay.
that history.
Well, that's something we'll flush out, I guess, but because we've gone through this wind cycle where we can build wind to a certain size that we need in a certain time, so we've really begun to focus on what exactly we need in a certain year, because you can build it in almost plug-and-play mechanisms with the gas to electricity as well. But is this size capped at 345? I think it probably is because of location and interconnection, but I wanted to double-check that.
It is based on their bid.
But do you know if this could be grown to 500 megawatts? Or
I do not know. I believe that's the expansion capability, but I would defer to Calpine.
Okay, we'll get that question when they come up. And then why not a 30-year PPA? You're also the VP of something else, contracts or something I saw in here.
Bidding,
yeah. Why not 30 years?
Well, that's the choice, again, of Calpine, because it's an existing facility to begin with that has everything except this other additional combustion turbine. And so for them...
Would you take a 30-year deal if they'd offered?
I guess we'd have to look at the bid.
Of course,
and then
right.
make a decision.
But why 20 years? Why is that what was offered, or is that what you asked for?
That was what was offered, correct.
Okay. And then let's see here a couple other things. We talked about the opportunity to sell in the market. I think that was really about it, just trying to... I look at, to be fair in the discussion of... It may be appropriate at time to do scale when the opportunity exists. And I'm just thinking back to how we would approach this if it was something different. Because that's kind of, I think, the gist of your point. The cost to me is kind of like Mr. Armstrong said in his early amounts, there's a cost and then we'll maybe go back and forth about it, but we can sort through those things in a rate case. Is whether this is a prudent investment for you to make right now is really what it comes down to.
And I would just echo on some things that Kurt and Chris have already said, and that in looking at the site, the more I analyze it, the more I think about it, this is a very unique opportunity. You don't get these very often in planning or in resource bidding or anything. This is an existing site that was initially designed and conceived to be expanded, as we are talking about today, with an additional CT. They have experienced workforce there already. They have the gas. They have the transmission. They are relatively close to our major load center in Mankato. They, you know, it's...
See, that's where I think I probably agree with you on.
I mean, they talk about the low price. I wanted just to add this. The reason the bid is so low is it's priced, you know, they're adding a CT. They're not building a combined cycle, I mean, right, from scratch here. So it really, that's why it reflects the value. You're getting the value of doubling the size of this resource, essentially doubling it for a CT.
What about something like North Dakota says it's maybe not a bad idea, but we won't give you cost recovery until year five of this PPA. That's something that you've ever thought about?
No, I haven't thought about that.
Well, what do you think about that?
I think it's a great resource to approve now.
To approve
really
now?
Do.
Okay, thank
and
you.
I would say that whether I had this job or not, just
all
looking
right
at the numbers and what it represents.
Commissioner Fedorchuk?
I don't have any other questions. Thank you, Bill.
Commissioner Christman.
This was the result, the bid that for this project. Calpine didn't just show up at you or Kurt's door, though. This was the result of that CONCAP, whatever it is. So did that direct people to make bids in the 20-year time frame, or could that have been any time frame and they just chose to bid a 20-year contract?
It invited longer-term capacity offers.
Okay. And how did the original Calpine, what's the history behind that? Was that something that followed a similar process to this? Was this CAPCON program in effect then already, and there was an offering and they came in with a bid, or is this something that the company sought out to do and then hired Calpine to develop it, or what?
I'm not immediately familiar with that process. I'm fairly new to the company, and I don't believe CAPCON existed back then. I think that's a fairly recent process that's been put in place, and I think this last proceeding, I think that was the first time it's actually been used in the Track 2 version of that, which is a self-build being offered in addition to other bids being submitted.
Okay, no other questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Simpson.
Just briefly, going to Commissioner Calk's question about very large scale, I understand you weren't with the company back when they had to reach those questions, Mr. Johnson, but as Director of Resource Planning, can you help explain the concept of lumpiness in resource planning? Because I really think that goes directly to Commissioner Calk's concern.
Okay. So both where I worked for Minnesota Power for 30 years and ran the resource planning there for 25 years, and big taconite processing, pulp and paper mills, 65-70% of your consumption was going to 10 customers. So you had to really make sure that they were well-supplied, you know, baseload resource. Boswell 4, very big coal unit, biggest coal unit of that company. There was a decision made to build that in 1980, and it was quite long because of the downturn in the economy that happened right after that. And we successfully, as a company then, we overbuilt. We didn't think we were overbuilding, but we did overbuild. And the lumpiness, because it came in at 500 megawatt size, 550 megawatts actually, we were able to effectively sell portions of that off, some short term, some long term, until the customers grew into the full value of that resource, except for 20%, which remained as a long term sale off of that. I think the same thing here. If you're taking on a very low cost resource, now with the Mankato PPA, that it's, yeah, you're going to be long for a while, but there all of these uncertainties, I mean, that's not, we use the word uncertainty, but there's some very significant drivers, not only on the demand side, but on the supply side too. We could lose resources due to failure. We could have retirements, you know, pushed on us on some of our resources sooner than we expect. But to have that security of being able to have a low-cost resource to manage any changes in that future demand and supply is a real value to that. And you can't size the timing of putting these resources in. I think Commissioner Kalk, you mentioned this before, that we can't wait until the year before and then build the exact size of the resource or something really close to it just to match that, because the demand is going to continue to change. It takes 5 to 7 years in advance to build a new resource of this type. Here we are, you know, it's 5 to 7 years. That's within the realm of what we've talked about here before the need is going to happen, 2016 to 2023. That's within the realm of what it would take to actually start from decision to do a combined cycle to actually getting it up and running. So it's not really that far out of the critical path for these for a large combined cycle. So
Mr. Simpson,
nothing
any
further,
other?
Your Honor.
All right. Thank you very much.
I do have one more that I thought of.
Yeah. All right, sure.
Where does this gas come from? Does NSP have its own pipeline, or is that a different contract that the company has to purchase it from a pipeline company, or where's it coming from?
We don't have our own pipeline. And
I didn't think so.
I mentioned that before about who we subscribe to. It's a purchased gas supply and firm transmission for a combined cycle. You need to secure the rights for firm delivery because you want to make sure the gas is there with this type of resource. It's not a peaking resource where you only run 5% of the time. It runs, you know, can run anywhere from 20% up to 70%. We haven't seen that level of capacity factor, but it has to have the gas supply for that wide range of operation.
But what pipeline is it coming from?
I don't know the name of the pipeline off the top of my head. I will defer to Calpine for that.
Okay. Another question. Thank you.
Sure. Any further questions from the commission?
Actually, Your Honor, I missed one note.
This is more of just a general knowledge question. Have you talked with our neighboring states in this, South Dakota, Iowa, and Wisconsin on this project? Is there going to kick in costs if it goes through too? Have you had discussion with those jurisdictions yet?
I have not had any discussions with them.
Do you know if Xcel has as a company? I'm just curious where you've talked to Minnesota Commission about this clearly. You're talking to us, but have you talked to the other states?
We have not been, to my knowledge, we have not been before the commissions of other states other than Minnesota and North Dakota.
Okay, and I know you know are the involvement of the solar, but have you been in front of those other states and those solar projects that we rejected, if you will?
To my knowledge, we have not been in front of the commissions on solar.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony. Mr. Simpson, any other witnesses?
That's all for us.
Okay.
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Very good. As we had discussed in the pre-hearing conference, it would be Calpine's opportunity at this point to present its case. So, Mr. Johnson, do you have a witness to call today?
Yes, we do, Your Honor. Calpine calls Mr. Todd Thornton to the stand.
Mr. Thornton, welcome. Before we begin your testimony, I need to advise you about the penalties for perjury in North Dakota. The maximum penalty for perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a maximum $10,000 fine, a maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both. Would you raise your right hand, please? Do you solemnly swear that the testimony that you're about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under the penalties of perjury?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you. Mr. Thornton, I believe you have prepared an introductory statement. Is that correct?
I do.
Yeah, you may proceed.
Good afternoon. I'm Todd Thornton, the Senior Vice President of Origination and Development for Calpine Corporation. Thank you to you all today for allowing Calpine the opportunity to participate in today's hearing. I have provided written testimony in support of this ADP, which has been filed with the Public Service Commission. My role here today is to highlight why the Mankato Energy Center represents a uniquely cost-effective means of adding combined cycle generating capability to NSP's energy mix. We originally designed the Mankato Energy Center as a 720-megawatt combined cycle generating facility that would be built in two phases. The recently executed PPA reflects construction of the second phase and the completion of the plant as originally designed. The primary element of the second phase, which is the subject of the PPA, includes the installation of a second combustion turbine and an expansion of the plant's cooling tower. The pricing of this PPA reflects the economic efficiency of being able to use existing plant equipment and infrastructure and take advantage of significant inherent economies of scale compared with standalone new build economics. The selection of the Mankato Energy Center following a rigorous competitive bidding process further demonstrates the application of least cost principles to this project. The PPA fully reflects the cost savings of being able to use existing infrastructure and passes the benefits of the project's economies of scale to NSP and its ratepayers. As Mr. Clark notes in his testimony, Calpine's pricing for the Mankato PPA reflects an opportunity to acquire combined cycle generating capacity at roughly the same price as it would to procure capacity from a typically much less expensive simple cycle combustion turbine peaking project. I'm not aware of any other similar opportunity that exists in MISO today, and I believe that the Commission should take that fact into consideration as it considers the prudence of NSP's resource decision in this matter. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson.
The testimony of Todd Thornton has been pre-filed and accepted into the record as Exhibit Calpine 1, so I offer Mr. Thornton for cross-examination.
Mr. Simser, any questions?
Mr. Thornton, just one. We've talked a lot today about how there's a lot of value here because of the existing site. Can you explain to us how it is that Calpine can offer combined cycle capacity at a combustion turbine price?
Sure. As I mentioned in my opening statement, as this project was originally designed, it was designed as a 720-megawatt facility. And in doing so, certain measures were taken at the time that the original plant was designed to kind of pre-fit or pre-bake the ability to drop this combustion turbine to complete the entire two-on-one facility whenever it was commercially viable. And in this instance, because the ultimate cost of installing the second unit is small relative to greenfield or starting from scratch, we were able to make such an offer through the competitive resource acquisition process.
So if I understand you correctly, you're essentially saying Calpine is building a combustion turbine, but because you're building it at an existing combined cycle plant and hooking it up to that existing combined cycle plant, you're essentially able to offer combined cycle capacity at combustion turbine pricing.
That's correct.
Okay. Nothing further, Your Honor.
Mr. Armstrong?
You're here today on behalf of Calpine providing support for NSP's application in this case.
Yes.
And I believe the company's testimony is essentially that this project is a very, very low price that they want to lock in at. Is that how you understand it?
The company being
NSP?
Yes.
It would seem to me then that the converse to that is if they can't get it now, it's going to be a higher price from you later.
Yes, that very well could be the case.
What makes me, I guess the question that raises in my mind, if Calpine is offering them such a low, low price now, why is it so interested in NSP getting this project at that price?
Well, first of all, let's go back to when this was originally, when this process started. It was 2013, and we bid and we were asked to hold open a price. And this project was originally scheduled to be a 2017 project. It has since been delayed through a number of regulatory proceedings, and now we have a 2019 project at this price. I think that as price is all about risk, right? There are many activities that have to take place, permitting, equipment procurement, contractor, you have to secure contractors. There's a sequence of things that must happen before this thing will ultimately go operational. The further you push out the start date, the more risk Calpine delivering a fixed price, fixed date certain contract takes on, and therefore the way to compensate for risk is to increase price. That's one way to think about it. The other way to think about it is the opportunity there at all? Meaning, we've been actively engaged with NSP since 2013 throughout this resource acquisition process, and we've not been actively marketing this transaction to other potential customers.
So that sounds to me like there's no possibility of somebody else immediately stepping in to NSP's shoes, if you will, and leasing from Calpine.
I mean, we've not been actively marketing the transaction.
So it's not like somebody else is going to step in the next 2 years and buy this product from you for operation?
I didn't say that.
Okay. So what do you say to that proposition?
I should say that there are a number of other buyers in the marketplace looking for capacity, and I mean, we've not talked to them about it, but I don't have any reason to believe that other buyers in the marketplace wouldn't have a similar view of combined cycle economics at combustion turbine pricing.
That's all the questions I have. Thank you.
Any questions from PSC staff?
Yes, thanks. On page, no page numbers, I guess. Question 12 of your testimony. At the bottom, you say, finally, I would add that the same attribute that allowed us to offer the competitive pricing limits our ability to substantially delay. This is because technology and specific equipment the plant was designed for may not be available at a cost-effective price or at all at some point in the future. We're all kind of making assumptions and guessing about things here, and I would guess technology would only improve and lower price. Can you tell me a little bit more specific information about what you're talking about there that you are worried would make this cause this to be a higher price in the future?
Sure. So when we originally designed this, the steam turbine, so there's a combustion turbine and a steam turbine that was installed, and effectively the steam turbine has excess capacity currently, and so when you put another combustion turbine next to the existing combustion turbine, the exhaust from that combustion turbine is filling up the unutilized capacity in the steam turbine currently. And so as you think about moving forward, there's the ability to match the existing technology in the market today from a combustion turbine perspective. As turbines evolve, they get bigger, they run hotter, they are more efficient, but at the same time, you also have interconnection limitations. And so as they get bigger, as they get more expensive and they get more efficient, there's an ultimate cost impact there. And so it is difficult for me to tell, what's going to happen into the future, but this plant was designed to take in two of these similarly sized gas turbines designed for this specific steam turbine. And there's no guarantee that those other gas turbines are going to be around that fit those specs in the future.
Okay. But that would apply even more so like in the beginning. Like it was even more, like what you're saying to me would mean that you should have added it in 2008 or 2009. I mean, each year you get farther out, it's more likely to turn into what you're describing you're worried about.
That's correct, and we would have had a contract in 2008 or 2009, we would have added it then.
Did you make any proposals to anybody, whether it was NSP or anybody else?
We participated in a number of processes, yes.
Okay. At this low price? I mean, at this in a relatively comparable low price?
We believe so, yes.
And you didn't win any of those?
Correct.
Obviously not. You also talk on the next page about, you get into the gas price projections when you're talking about the staff testimony. Again, we could all be filthy rich if we had the right answer to that. But you assert, as a big player in the gas to electricity market, that you're comfortable with gas prices, and you say for the foreseeable future. I'd like you to provide some more specifics on that, if you would, please, and I'd also like to know what the definition in your mind is of foreseeable future.
Sure. Well, these are 40-year assets that we invest in, combined cycle technology. You know, as we think about what has happened since the shale discoveries and shale gas is out there, we've seen a significant decrease in the price of natural gas. We burn a lot of it not only here in MISO, but also in Texas and in the Northeast. And, you know, while I don't have I can't predict what the price of natural gas is going to do, I can certainly tell you that we are making decisions as if natural gas stays, you know, continued. It's the price stays relatively low for the foreseeable future. And when I talk about the foreseeable future, we're making investment decisions, capital decisions over the long term. I think a good example of that is a combustion turbine in combined cycle mode is about a 40-year asset.
So your foreseeable future, though, is 40 years? I mean, that's what I'm trying to –
Yeah, I mean, so as I think – so we deploy capital in one of two ways, in markets where we can earn a return dispatching it into the market, or in markets where we can get a contract for revenue certainty. And to the extent that we are putting our capital at risk and selling capital into the – or selling power into the market, we think about that kind of horizon, that time horizon.
But are you telling me that you think gas prices are going to stay where they are? You project gas prices for 40 years?
No, we cannot see out that far.
So I'm still trying to get – what are you – well, for the comment about the gas prices where you talk about them remaining stable for the foreseeable future, can you put a number of years or months on that word foreseeable?
I think the word foreseeable, I think it's easy to make the statement that the foreseeable future would be anywhere, you know, 10 to 20 years.
And you don't think that the Clean Power Plan and the jump in gas generation is going to affect the price of gas?
I think that continued competition, that certainly will have an impact. But I think that ultimately the resources and drilling technologies continue to improve, and the supply and price signals will continue to exist in this market, and will ultimately keep a stable price environment.
Okay. Do you have any questions? That's all. Thanks.
Thank you. Questions from the commission. Commissioner Kalk.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you for your testimony. Glad you intervened. Why not get a chance to talk to you directly? Alana flushed out, I think, most of the questions I was going to ask. But to her point about, you put this out there before, but this is – XL was the only one that met the requirement. Why would you think they – were able to make this work where others weren't interested?
I can't speak for planning processes, but some utilities like to, perhaps look at renewable power, or they may have different views on gas prices. I can't speak to
sure. How does it affect the price you offer it to NSP the fact that they own the substation that it runs through and they own the power line. How does that affect the price you offer?
Sure. So when we offer a price, we're doing so as one of the NSP witnesses described. They're thinking of it as a rental payment. There's a fixed rental payment or lease payment, and we're simply earning a return.
I guess what I'm trying to say is, could you offer the same deal to Minnesota Power or Otter Tail that you offered to NSP? Is that the same deal you offered anybody, or did they get a better deal because where they're at?
So I think about earning a return on the capital that I invest. And the capital that I invest to complete this facility is no different than, I mean, I can build this 720-megawatt facility for the same dollar price that I can for Otter Tail or Minnesota Power. It doesn't cost me anymore.
So it doesn't cost you anymore to build a facility, but the economics – so you don't believe that the economics of what – where NSP is situated as far as they own the substation, they own the transmission, they have the load there, that doesn't benefit them it doesn't help them?
They own the wires.
But that's not at all in your bidding process.
I sell power at the bus bar.
Got it. So that's a company backside decision then. Fair enough. Why don't you just build this yourself and sell into the market? If it's such a good deal for them, I'd be nervous if I was your shareholder and you're giving them a great deal that you're not charging them enough. I mean, why don't you just build it yourself and sell into the market if gas is going to be stable for 20 years and make your own money?
That's a good question. I think that we think about pricing as a measure of risk. And to the extent that I can go invest a certain amount of dollars to complete this plant and earn a fixed, stable return over 20 years, that's a risk-reducing transaction.
For you, but not for XL customers, potentially.
It's a risk-reducing transaction for us, and I think what we've heard today is in their assessment that the economics and the what they've seen on this combined cycle facility ultimately leads to low-cost combined cycle capacity and energy.
But if I'm paraphrasing your answer, the reason you want to go with somebody like Xcel is so you remove some of your risk. That's why you don't want to build it yourself and be a individual power producer selling into the market. You want more certainty for your company so you get them to buy it from you for 20 years.
Well, sure, and then they're the logical buyer.
Okay, so they're the logical buyer. So if they back away, then what? Because there's been a point that Xcel has tried to make today that, hey, listen, we got to buy this or somebody else is going to buy it. And to use the word buy one more time, I'm not buying that. I think that they go with you and you work with them. Otherwise, this project doesn't come together.
I think that there are other buyers out in the market. But again, I maintain we've not canvassed the market. We've been engaged.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Thank you, Todd. I'm sorry I'm going to have you backtrack a tiny bit on some information you covered in your opening statement. When was this facility constructed originally?
It originally went into service in 2006.
Okay, and can you tell me a little bit about the technology used?
Sure, it's a gas turbine, a Siemens gas turbine, fed into a steam turbine, basically creating or capturing the exhaust and combined cycle technology, and we've got a long-term arrangement with NSP that was a result of an RFP process that was run in the early part of the decade.
Where does this technology stand in comparison to some newer combined cycle technologies?
Sure. So gas turbine technology, I would say, has and the path that it's taken over the last 10 years has been there's nothing revolutionary. They're still selling, the large manufacturers are still selling the same kind of frame technology that the original Mankato gas turbine of this F-frame gas turbine that's currently installed. And there's been marginal benefits on output and efficiency, but it also comes at an increased cost.
And can you talk about the efficiency of this facility?
research that we've offered through our price and our contract a measure of efficiency that's characteristic of combined cycle technology in the 7.2 range. So that's our measure of efficiency. So we guarantee that the unit will convert fuel at a rate.
Okay. Why? Let's see here. Why do you want NSP to purchase this? I mean, why do you want to be here advocating for them if this is, sounds like you've got a good product that a lot of people might be interested in?
Like I said, this facility was originally designed to be a 2x1 facility, a 720 megawatt facility. Through the competitive resource acquisition process, NSP had a need. We responded to that need with this opportunity, and we find that it provides a low cost for NSP and at a price that we're willing to transact on for 20 years.
But you could probably sell this to somebody else, so why did you intervene to try to advocate for NSP to be the purchaser?
Again, I mean, we've been participating since 2013, and while we think that we could go out and sell it in the marketplace, we are here, we have a contract, we've negotiated it, we've spent years trying to do this, and we feel like this is a good opportunity now.
So you've invested a lot of time in this contract, and it would be probably expensive for you to start that all over again.
I mean,
better to see this
from a time and resource perspective. I mean, expensive, I don't know, but from a time perspective, it's a bird in hand approach.
Okay, and then my last question is pretty simple. Is there a redundant supply for gas to feed this unit?
We have oil backup on the first unit, but there's no oil. There's no oil backup for the second unit.
Okay, so if there's something that jeopardizes this gas line, the plant is down or offline.
For that gas line, but we do offer an availability guarantee for unexcused outages that gives Xcel a rebate, if you will, a rebate on their capacity payment to the extent that we're not operating in a manner that's sufficient with the standards set forth.
But you're not responsible for the gas getting to the source anyway. So it's just that there's some fault on your part of operating the facility. Okay. Thanks, Todd.
Commissioner Chrisman?
Can you tell me where the gas comes from?
It's a northern natural line. Where it comes from, I don't know. I mean, it's not the commodity. The commodity is comes from NSP.
Northern Natural, not Northern Border.
Northern Natural owns the line, and then we own the lateral that connects the plant to the main line.
Okay. When advisory staff was asking you about why this didn't sell in 2008 or 2010, is it fair to say that at that time the whole concept of gas, turning gas into electricity, was not as lucrative based on gas prices as what it might seem now?
I mean, I can't speak for their utility decision-making process, but to the extent that there were, they obviously had other opportunities that they found more lucrative, or they chose not to to contract with Mankato.
Gas was much higher though then, before the big shale boom, correct?
In 2008, yes.
Okay. And you've mentioned a couple of times, mentioned this as a 40-year asset. This gets back to our previous discussion. Why did you turn in a 20-year bid then? Why wouldn't you have bid this for 40 years or at least 30 and tried to get your whole facility used up?
We'd love to sell it for 30 years. We would. Through the resource acquisition process, and I don't recall specifically if there were targets for bids. I do recall that they were long-term in nature. We have another 20-year deal with NSP, and we thought that the 20-year term was consistent with what was already executed. But we'd love to sell power for 30 years.
Okay. No other questions.
Mr. Johnson, any redirect?
Just briefly, Your Honor. Mr. Thornton, one of the previous questions by Commissioner Kalk of Mr. Johnson was whether or not there was any additional expansion capability of this particular turbine. Is that an option available to Calpine or not?
From a scale benefit, no. I think the interconnection agreement is also capped, so we'd have to start over through that process. Which is the driving factor for the 720-megawatt facility.
Okay, thank you. And Calpine 1 has now been in operation nearly 10 years, and over the course of the last 10 years, you did mention that there have been some increases in technology in the turbines. Is that correct?
Correct.
Has there been any increase in technology that is truly substantial enough to give merit to delaying the process of adding this turbine for technology reasons?
No.
Okay. And had this been any other company that you had entered into a PPA with, would you also be in support of their request for an ADP?
Yes.
Thank you. No further questions.
Mr. Armstrong, any questions?
Nothing further.
PSC staff?
Well, your Northern Natural response piqued Jerry's curiosity. You're buying your gas from Northern Natural and NSP is transporting it?
We are not buying gas. We are burning gas at the burner tip, and somebody else's responsibility to get it there.
Okay. That's all.
Thank you. Any further questions from the commission?
Thank you, Your Honor. I had one note I missed. I need to start using pink stickies like Commissioner Fedorchuk so I don't forget them. I think it was first witness, thank you, talked about the potential CO2 credits. If there are CO2 credits to sell, they're not yours to sell, they're XL's to sell, or do you agree that these would be XL's to sell if there are CO2 credits available? Had you even thought about it?
So there are change in law provisions in the contract itself that handle a situation like that.
So to your knowledge, though, you agree with what Excel said, that they're their CO2 credits, not yours?
Correct.
Okay. And then I had another note here. The other approvals that you need to build this, what would they be? Is there some local zoning? Is there other permits? Where are those at?
Typically, the local permits, and there was a hearing earlier in the week. We need an air permit.
I had a note there. So what's the status of your approval in other jurisdictions, making it sound like we need to make a decision here, but it sounds like you just told me you don't even have an air permit yet.
Oh, that's correct. We don't. But we also have a 2019 start date, right? And so when we think about 2 years for construction, 1 year for permitting. And so we are getting very close to filing the air permit. We are engaged with the locals for the local site permit and all the appropriate jurisdictions that are out there. And so we're taking measures to advance, but permitting, air permitting, securing equipment, all of those things will not be complete until our contract, if you will, with NSP is fully effective.
So you won't go forward with the air permit until we make a decision on this in the positive nature? If we don't approve it, you're not going to go forward with the air permit?
Once our contract is effective with NSP, we'll move forward.
How do you guarantee that you're going to get an air permit? I mean, we got permits that are held up all over the state because of federal agencies, state agencies, that the Sandpiper pipeline is locked up in Minnesota forever. How do you know you're going to get an air permit?
We permit plants all the time, and that's a risk that we're willing to take. We also have some conditions that are fairly standard in contracts like this that allow for relief to the extent that you've got permit delay.
Yeah, and what's the discharge number for CO2 that's going to come out of this facility?
I don't have the specifics. I'm sorry.
Well, let's get that out there. I mean, I assume it's probably the standard 18-something or other, but it'd be nice to know what that is. So is there any new type of anything that's going to be emitted out of this plant than the other ones?
No, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
Yeah, just want to reiterate that would be good to know just what the level is. You don't know? What is the current
it's
one?
It's about half of the emissions of coal.
So is it like 1,000 or... 1,100, 1,200. Does it meet the requirements of the new source standards? Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Chris.
No other questions.
Thank you. Any further, Mr. Johnson?
No further questions, Your Honor.
Mr. Armstrong?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Simpson?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Your Honor, would it possible be to have a few-minute break before we move to advocacy staff's case?
Yes. What I wanted to do is make sure, Mr. Johnson, you have no further witnesses.
We
is
have
that
no
correct?
Further witnesses.
Okay. I agree. It's a good time for a 10-minute break.
Can we talk just briefly about that late-filed exhibit, though, so we clarify exactly what they're going to ask, what they're going to give us? Because Commissioner Fedorchak and I are having this discussion that we should probably have a little louder. So I guess I was thinking, what is the exact discharge number that you're modeled? And then, Julie, what did you say you were looking for? Just
well, this comes online in 19, so I'm assuming it falls under the new source requirements, and those are fairly stringent. So I'm just assuming that it meets those. But once we see what that is, then I would assume that it's regulated that way. But that will be Minnesota's problem more than likely, since it's
right.
be part of their state plan, not ours.
All right, let's take that break. Thank you.
Zeph, can we talk real quick?
No kidding.
We can wait.
That's crazy.
So, this is a 1,000-megawatt coal plant.
I have a some kind of
How's it going? I just sent that.
staff to present their case. So, Mr. Armstrong.
Oh, Richard Polich.
Mr. Polich, before we begin your testimony, I need to advise you about the penalties for perjury in North Dakota. The maximum penalty for perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a maximum $10,000 fine, a maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both. Would you raise your right hand, please? Do you solemnly swear that the testimony that you're about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under the penalties of perjury?
I do.
Thank you. Mr. Armstrong?
Mr. Polich, we have your testimony admitted in the record already as staff exhibits 1A and 1B. Are there any changes you'd like to make to that testimony?
Not at this time.
You heard Mr. Johnson's testimony earlier about the difference in the numbers between yours and his calculations. Could you please comment on that?
In regards to Mr. Johnson's comments, I do agree with his assessment and with his position in terms of what the net cost impact would be, with the exception of what the potential for capacity credit would be.
And what's your difference with him on the capacity credit issue?
The capacity credit is somewhat of a, I don't want to call it a guessing game, but it's a projection of what that potentially could be as a result of what the MISO markets could be, what other types of markets it can be. And there's been a significant amount of variation in that recently.
Does your agreement with his numbers change your ultimate opinion on whether this project is prudent?
No, it does not.
Why not?
Because when I look at the there is one minor difference, the revised forecast submitted by NSP. I'm fine with that revised forecast. It changed the need for capacity by 1 year over what I was originally advocating. And if you take that out of the picture, you still have a situation where that capacity is not needed till 23-24. The issue comes in is the benefit, the cost associated with North Dakota ratepayers will be paying is the issue. And during that 5-year time period, you're still looking at a cost increase to ratepayers that may not be necessary.
Thank you. I tender Mr. Polich for cross.
Good afternoon, Mr. Polich.
Good afternoon.
We've been waiting patiently.
Mr. Simpson, just a minute. PSC staff, did you have questions that you wanted to ask as well before we get into cross?
I would rather ask at the end of cross.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Simpson.
Sorry, Your Honor. Good afternoon, Mr. Polich. So if I'm hearing your colloquy with Mr. Armstrong correctly, essentially you recognize that any differences that Mr. Johnson had with your calculations, Mr. Johnson, generally, you're comfortable with our corrections of your analysis, and that at least we can all, do you also think we can all agree that whatever need may exist based on the company's LNRs, the several LNR tables that have been presented throughout the hearing, we're looking at a capacity need based only on that data point of somewhere between 23 and 25?
That is correct.
And would it be fair to say that, given the variability of those LNRs, it's fair to say that it could be something different next year as well?
Up or down?
That's correct.
Yes, because, you look at the history. I mean, you look at what's happened since 2010 versus now, and your load forecast has gone down. And with what's happening in the marketplace today, whether it's economic, whether it's what's happening from energy efficiency perspective, and that those numbers could go down very easily.
And similarly, just like demand could potentially go down, like you say, or go up, we never know. It's also fair to say that our resources to meet that demand could go up or go down. You heard Mr. Hager testify regarding Blue Lake and the potential for catastrophic failure as those units age. So it would be fair to say that both on the load side and on the resources side, there's potential for variability.
That issue is incorporated into what your reserve margins are. And assuming that NSP is properly designing their system capacity to with the proper reserve margins, that's already built into your forecast.
Oh, okay. With respect to the capacity credit, I understand you have a disagreement with Mr. Johnson, but Mr. Johnson the record does reflect those same calculations both with the capacity credit and without the capacity credit, and Mr. Johnson essentially characterized those as bookends. Do you agree with that characterization?
Not totally. I think that I think that the capacity credits could – well, let me take that back as I think about it. In reality, yes, that could be characterized as bookends. The bookends could be zero to the amount that we've shown on the record.
And your testimony focuses very much on the period of time between 2019 and your testimony is 2025, Mr. Johnson's 2024, Mr. Hager's supplemental is potentially 2023. But your analysis only looks at that period of time, which I believe it's fair to characterize your testimony. You say we have to carry the resource.
That is correct.
But I can't find in your testimony any analysis of the resource over its entire life. Are you saying that that's not relevant?
From my perspective and experience in this marketplace, I've seen many utilities come in with resource plans that overforecast what their needs are going to be. The situation, as mentioned by your witnesses, is very dynamic right now, and dynamic to the point where we have less certainty than I've had in a lot of my career in terms of what's going to happen, both from a resource need perspective and mainly from a resource need perspective, but also from the perspective of what's the availability of what's out there. To the extent, 5 years is a long time today. And I would say that the prudent measure is to wait before you add this capacity.
I think that's clear from your testimony that the prudent measure is to wait, but I just don't see any discussion in your testimony of the life cycle of the resource or the cost of this resource can compare to others. And so I guess I'm just trying to wonder, it doesn't seem that that was sufficiently important for you to testify again.
From the fact that I don't think the capacity is needed, that trumps the issue of whether what the following years are worth.
Okay. So the fact that the company characterizes this as getting a really good bargain that will provide long-term benefits to the system, in your mind, is irrelevant because the LNR's tables say what they say?
Because all indications are you don't need that resource right now.
Nothing further.
Mr. Johnson, any questions for the witness?
No further questions, Your Honor.
Thank you. PSC staff?
We were just wondering if you had done any analysis or asked for any sensitivity analysis regarding energy sales into the market from this particular facility and how that would impact costs to North Dakota ratepayers, cost or benefit?
I didn't look into it. There's clearly data that's available out there, whether you look at the MISO markets, the capacity markets and stuff like that. The numbers that I have seen in regards to MISO capacity markets based on today's prices don't show the recovery numbers of what Mr. Johnson was stating in his testimony. The numbers I've seen would result in about half of the cost recovery that he's indicated.
And what about energy sales?
Energy sales, with the way the MISO market works, is really somewhat indifferent if you're selling into the MISO market. It doesn't really net any net benefit to NSP as a result of because they're selling and buying at the same time from the MISO market.
Okay. Thank you.
Questions from... I'm sorry, questions from the commission?
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you for your testimony, sir. You're a very smart man. I'm going to put that out there, right?
Thank you,
I said the other people weren't smart, but so you've got a...
How do you respond to that?
Say yes, thank you. Well, it's a setup question is what it is. like Forrest Gump. So you've got a Bachelor of Science in Nuclear Engineering, a Bachelor of Science in Mechanical Engineering, a Master of Business Administration. So you've been around a while, right?
Yes, I have.
Okay. So you're saying they don't need this resource. I get it. But you're also a nuclear engineer. So how do I build a 2,000-megawatt nuke plant knowing I'm not going to need that full 2,000 megawatts? How does a regulator handle that question?
It's a tough question. And when you're forecasting that much capacity from a single source, you really seriously have got to look at how that's going to work into your portfolio mix. When I was at Consumers Energy, you know, we were dealing with that situation quite often, especially back in the 70s and 80s when we didn't have the combined cycle units that we have today. When, you know, you're looking at a nuclear plant,
and coal was still an option.
Coal was still an option. You know, combined cycle projects, especially something like the Mankato project, where you have part of the project already built, you can very quickly add capacity there. You can't do that with a central station.
So you're saying that you feel that the best thing is just to wait a little bit and then add to it. That's not going to – so I get that from this point. But how do you deal with building a huge baseload resource that you don't need now? If commissions don't accept some of that cost for ratepayers early, you're never going to build anything of size and scope.
I agree to a certain point. You can time capacity like that to fit into your portfolio market at the most opportune time. The analysis that you do in terms of cost factors, in terms of your integrated resource planning, can actually show you when that time frame would be. In today's marketplace, I would advocate that you would plan a large resource like that to kind of occur at a point in time after you see the initial needs, but enough in front of when you need the final amount of capacity, especially with something like a nuclear plant where you're going to base load that. There's many different capacity options that are built into the marketplace that will allow you to a lot of flexibility. The advantage of having a MISO, the way I think about MISO is it's taking NSP and multiplying it multiple times, because MISO governs the resource or runs the resources throughout the whole MISO footprint. So it's selecting resources based upon these costs. It has multiple resources.
There's some must-run like wind that you got to take. So there's policies that are already skewing this stuff.
There are, and there's cases where must-run units will drive prices negative.
Sure.
And we're seeing that. You see that a lot in ERCOT, where you know you have much, much more wind than in MISO footprint. But with... When you look at it from the commission perspective, you've got to somewhat rely upon using the resources that are out there and planning that capacity addition at a point when it's best. It's you know, if you say you need 2,000 megawatts in 2030, and you don't want to bring that unit online in 2010, but you can attempt to time that nuclear plant to come on in 2028, 2027. You just have to work with it that way.
As you manage your portfolio, what might be coming end of life as you bring other things on?
That's correct.
So how would you advise the commission on, we know that NSP needs some power down the road a little bit, so they back away from this, then they come back with something in the future that, looking back, we kind of screwed that up because we should have approved that.
It's a risk.
Whose risk is it? Ratepayers, right? Both sides. They bait too much.
It could be go both ways. There is technology changes that are happening in the combustion turbine market. I've got a client right now where we're taking a frame F machine and doing some relatively inexpensive upgrades to it. And adding 20% capacity to that combined cycle unit, and it's because of what's happening. What's happening in terms of metallurgy, in terms of unit efficiency, designs, things like that.
So you would take exception, and I won't belabor it much longer. But so you'd take exception to one of the witnesses that said, "This is the best cost we're going to have." You don't necessarily buy off on that.
I don't buy off on it
because I would tell you that when I heard that, I don't. just listening, but I know, like, for wind farms, for example, the cost of wind towers is just plummeting.
That's
where we're getting the wind coming in even better yet. So you're saying that might be the case with this type of equipment.
You look at solar. All right. I'm working with companies and clients, and we're seeing solar prices in places like Pennsylvania coming down to 6.5 cents a kilowatt hour. And this is for a 3.5 megawatt facility. It's not even big. It's not even really what I would classify as utility scale. We're seeing stuff down in Texas and that in the sub 5 cents per kilowatt hour range.
So if this could be delayed 2 years and then Xcel enters into it, or I guess they're already into it, if they started 2 years from now, would it be okay then in your assessment?
I would prudently say that, delaying this project 2 to 3 years would be appropriate.
All right. Thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Thank you, Mr. Pollock?
Polich.
Polich. Sorry about that.
Polich.
thanks for your testimony and for being here today. A few questions for you on my little handy-dandy stickies. I will note that Commissioner Crisman's been watching me with these sticky notes for a number of months now. And see? He's transitioning. Pretty soon they'll be pink without lines. Then you will have arrived, Randy.
That'll be the moment.
a couple things here. Why didn't you recognize some level of value of the company for the company to sell the capacity? Why did you dismiss that?
Because actually the company didn't, when I was looking at their initial testimony, it wasn't necessarily a factor in it. And so my testimony was based on that. It wasn't until I saw the rebuttal testimony that really came into play.
Okay, so you don't disagree now?
I don't disagree that there's an opportunity for it. What I question is how much is that worth?
And do you have a recommendation for how we should?
As we've talked about, it could be anywhere from Mr. Johnson's number to zero, depending on the timing for that the capacity and how flush the markets is right now. If you take today's MISO market prices for capacity, I've estimated that's worth only about $2 million off of the price that we've talked about.
Okay. Did you, I can't recall in your testimony if you agreed with the prudence of the Red River Valley project.
Yes, I did.
Then if that one is prudent, why is this one not prudent?
Because of timing on it. Let me take a step back, all right? Actually, I did not. I got confused that with Black Dog.
Okay.
All right. Because the Red River project was not part of this case, I did not even factor that into my testimony.
Do you think that this is outdated technology?
No, it's not outdated technology. It is, but I'm not certain what combustion turbine that Calpine is intending to use. I do know that I did hear mentioned it was a Siemens unit. Not knowing the model numbers and stuff like that, I don't know if it's the most current combustion technology that's out there. As I mentioned, there is new combustion technologies, at least in some of the projects I've worked on recently. And depending on what they're going, I really don't know.
Okay. In your conversation with Commissioner Kalk, you were talking about the value proposition and kind of questioning the company's position on that and arguing from a technology standpoint the cost should come down. But from what I've heard, the value doesn't come from the cost of the technology. It's the location and the existing infrastructure there, the pipeline, the transmission line, the fact that you're building on a brownfield, not, a pre-set site that's already ready for this very thing. That is where the value proposition comes in from what we've heard from the company. What's your response to that, and why do you seem to kind of dismiss that as well?
I'm not dismissing that. Okay, again, if NSP needed this capacity in 2019, I would agree that this appears to be a very good project. All right. The fact that it is on an existing combined cycle project that was designed for a two-on-one configuration, and the fact that you can build that capacity out, and they're saying it at simple cycle prices, and I'm not familiar with what full infrastructure is out there because do they have the heat, the boiler there to connect the combustion turbine up to already? If not, that's a cost they have to put into the project. But there is other aspects of it. The fact you already have your interconnection agreements in place, mm-hmm. the fact that you've got the substations, the gas pipelines, and there's a lot of infrastructure that's already existing, it makes the addition of this capacity cheaper.
Okay. Then you disagree with it because it's not needed. Then if you could talk about why you discredit some of the other factors. Mr. Hager spelled out a number of them. I want to repeat them just so I know why you think they don't matter. He talked about, let's see here, hold on a minute. all the variability of the MISO system operations, that there's constant changes, sometimes dramatic, and there's a list of these, so hold on, that some of them very dramatic swings that they're required to respond to in short order. There are major environmental policies that could affect the retirements on the system and the availability of capacity for purchase. And there's known uncertainties in the load forecast that you have recognized as well. Most of them going down, but, you know, assuming that those are uncertainties, they could swing up as well. And then the whole concern that some of their demand customers would choose to not be customers that they could bump off, choose to go back to firm. So those elements combined with the cost, the value proposition, are what they're selling. Why do you dismiss those values or those other benefits that they're arguing for?
I don't know that I dismiss them. But I can argue in regards to, let's talk about the MISO footprint again for a second here. I could argue in fact, I will state right now that there is actually more stability in MISO than there would be in NSP because you have a larger diversity of resources. You have a larger overall system. You have interconnection capabilities to move power around. Yes, there's limitations in certain areas, but it's there. And the MISO market has resulted in a drop in the need for reserve margins. When I started in this industry, the traditional reserve margin was 15% or more. We're down to 7%, and that's because of the diversity of need. I would argue that that there is a certain stability in being connected with the MISO market and being able to tap the multitude of resources that are available. And so from that perspective, I'm not certain that that creates additional major concern in the marketplace. The call for capacity and stuff like that in terms of day-to-day stuff is real, and it occurs. I've got clients with stuff on the south end of MISO, and we've seen some very strange things occur, you know, at various times this year because of the way you have to support the grid and what your obligations are as a MISO entity. But again, that's put into your reserve margin planning functions. And that 7% that's set up incorporates these issues. The reserve margin that MISO sets is based upon their analysis of your diversity and what your resources are. You know, and one of the classic examples they have is that, you know, if you're a 2,000 megawatt system and you've got two plants, all right, you need 50% reserve margin. Because if one plant goes down, you can't cover your reserves.
So, but what about, okay, in a normal environment, the MISO system might provide adequate stability. But throw in these new environmental regulations where you have not just NSP, but we have MDU and Otter Tail, who are all looking at their old plants, all thinking about retiring them, all maybe being forced to retire them. 2019 is when that process starts here. And then all of them thinking, well, let's wait as long as we can, and we'll just buy from MISO if we need extra capacity. Who's looking at that and assuring that MISO is going to have enough there? Where do we know that that is being done, that planning, that and that capacity is going to be there for companies to purchase?
That's where the importance of integrated resource planning comes in.
Which is what they're saying they've done and is the reason why they need to do this project.
I would agree with you in principle, but in this particular case, I mean, you look at NSP's, I think the lowest reserve margin they had based upon the most current tables is about 7.5%. And that was for 1 year in, I think it was 1919 or 2019. Other than that, the reserve margins are closer to 10% for most of that five-year period that we're talking about. If you look at the overall MISO footprint, obviously, you know, with capacity prices as low as they are, there's sufficient capacity out there in the near term. If we look at the impact of even the Clean Power Plan, realistically, that impact doesn't start till 2022. And then it's phased in over the next 8 years. And you're not going to see people just suddenly switching off their coal plants. It's going to be a progressive analysis. There's a lot of studies being done that are going to be done by various states in terms of how they're going to hit the CO2 reduction requirements and stuff like that. We've got time to think about where this is going to go and to see where it's going to go.
Okay. So since you're talking about time, what is the length of time? You talked a little bit about this with Commissioner Kalk. We weren't real specific about how far in advance companies should pull the trigger on engaging for, you know, replacement of baseload resources, which we all acknowledge take more planning and are more lumpy.
That's true.
Is this too lumpy? Too big of a lump?
Actually, I think it's not as lumpy as it used to be. You know, in today's world with the evolution of combustion turbines, you look at even reciprocating engines efficiencies now that are approaching efficiencies of combustion turbines on a simple cycle basis, and you can add those in very small quantities. The time frame, again, comes back to what resource you're adding. This comes back to what the importance of integrated resource planning is. It comes back to looking at, okay, if I need a combined cycle, I'm going to need a little bit more time to do this because of the size of the project, the footprint of it, and what I have to develop. You know, realistically, you know, 5 years is more than sufficient time to go from a greenfield site to a combined cycle project today. You know, and if you're going on an existing site, you know, you can drop a peaker in at their existing coal plants very quickly because, again, all the resources are there. You're going to have enough of a footprint to drop a peaker in, you know, that you could probably do that in 2 years.
What about the notion that there's going to be a rush on combined cycle plants and all the parts to construct them, and so the prices are going to spike in that 2022, 23, 24 time frame because everybody's going to be hitting that at the same time.
Good question, and we don't have to go back more than about 12 years to see when that happened last time. During the, you know, just after the turn, after the 2000 time period, there was a huge rush to buy combined cycle projects and combustion turbines. GE's queue for new units was in excess at one point of 5 years, and you were required to put some rather onerous deposits down on those. And within 2 years, that market completely evaporated, and you had people with combustion turbines sitting in warehouses.
And why was that?
Because the market evaporated.
Why did the market evaporate?
It evaporated because the capacity need wasn't there.
Do you see that a fair comparison, though, when you have an environmental rule that's kind of driving the
–
I don't see that evaporating.
I don't
I'd like to see it evaporating, but I don't.
No, I don't see it evaporating, but I do see a case where it won't be as abrupt. That capacity – that
because the EPA has been so flexible?
Partially. No comment on that one. I will say that the one thing about this is that the Clean Power Plan is a 10-year horizon. And actually, if you look at it from now, it's a 15-year horizon.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a larger variety of resources to meet these things. And I think you're going to see renewables continue to become a part of that resource mix to the extent it won't. You know, you're going to be replacing some of that capacity with stuff that that is renewable. You're going to see a time horizon, a planning horizon that you can that you can put things in a consistent planning function that doesn't necessarily create it. Will prices go up? Probably. You know, just market conditions may dictate that. At the same time, I don't expect them to go much higher than they are that much higher than they are today.
If the company waits and doesn't pull the trigger on this and then has a need that they fill with, say, a peaking unit and wind, do you think that that's good for customers? Is there anything lost in that approach for the system, for the customers?
Actually, in that regards, it could be potential that a peaking unit might provide some advantages. One thing about combined cycle projects is they don't have the same operational flexibility that a peaker does. Their startup times are longer. The efficiency numbers that they're talking about is, you know, is at higher load levels. So you don't have as, you know, you may not have the same ability to meet your load requirements as you would with a peaker. And the question is how often you really need to operate these units.
Do you have concerns with the reliability issues on a system that is depending largely on peakers and renewables? System of the future, I should say.
I have worked with utilities in the Caribbean, which all of their resources are reciprocating engines, and their supply comes from an oil tank. I look at what's happening in Hawaii right now, where they have renewable levels and solar penetration levels that the market said cannot occur. They have cases where they have, you know, 200% of what a portion of the system need in solar on that system, and it's functioning properly. No, I really don't have any concern with reliability. Systems work.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Commissioner Christman.
We were discussing earlier the decreasing costs of wind and solar. because of new technology. Is it fair to say that the utility grade, that those are probably 10-year-old industries?
I'm not certain I understand your question, Commissioner.
The utility grade wind and solar that you were talking about, that were the prices we've seen a big decline in recent mm-hmm. years. Is that roughly 10 or 15-year-old technology and industry that we've seen this in?
Not in wind. What we're seeing in wind is cases where manufacturers are changing their blade designs, going to larger units, changing, and that's a technology change. All right, when you can take, you know, my experience is in the Midwest. We don't have the same wind conditions you guys have out here in North Dakota. But, you know, Michigan, Indiana, Ohio, wind conditions are much less than they are here. And 5 years ago, wind projects were barely economical with the full tax credits and everything else. But we've gone to longer blades. We've gone to new aerodynamic designs in the blades such that you're getting much higher capacity and availability factors out of those units. In the case of solar, we're seeing changes in the strata of the solar panels themselves that are increasing the effectiveness of them. We're seeing changes in things you don't think about, the inverters, where those changes are creating a much better integration into the grid. And then, you know, we have the wild card in this whole thing is storage.
The wind farms that are wind turbines, because at that time the wind farms were one and two turbine units, mm-hmm. that we sited in North Dakota in the first part of the last decade were fractions of a megawatt each. Yeah. So to me, even 10 years ago, wind technology was hardly comparable to what it is today.
I agree.
Solar has changed even in a smaller time frame. And so my point is, it's what we know today as wind and solar power is pretty new technology compared to combined cycle gas. Is that correct?
Well, even combined cycle gas, in the last 10 years, there have been some significant improvements in combined cycle gas. We're running at much higher temperatures than we used to, back in the even around, you know, we're almost 200 degrees hotter in combustion temperatures than we saw 10 years ago.
So you dispute Mr. Thornton's testimony that there's been nothing revolutionary in the last?
It depends on what you define as revolutionary. I can, you know, I'm an engineer, okay? And an increase of 200 degrees, that's almost 10% increase in your firing temperatures. And you look at what we've done in terms of combustor technology and this stuff, I consider that incremental technology because it's improved the efficiencies of these units significantly. You know, I mean, the fact that you can get a simple cycle efficiency close to 60% nowadays is pretty crazy.
So with labor costs and other associated costs that go into building a new greenfield combined cycle plant, in the last 10 years, have those costs driven up the cost of building a new combined cycle, or have technology improvements caused the price to come down in the last 10 years?
The size of the projects have caused the costs to come down. When you take, I look at a GE frames, 7FA, or EA unit, which, back in the late 90s was, almost state-of-the-art, and that was a 75-megawatt unit. Now you've got, you're coming out with, the F version that's 165 megawatts at almost the same size footprint. You have a larger generator package. It doesn't take that much more additional labor to construct that project. And so because the units become bigger, your labor costs per megawatt have gone down.
Okay.
So in general, you don't look at this project favorably because it's 4 years too early, but did I understand correctly that you felt if it were needed now, based on the cost savings of the facility being there and everything, it would be a good project if it were needed now?
Based upon the analysis I've seen, if NSP needed that project, and I would say, you know, in the early 2020 time frame, assuming it comes online in 2019, I would have a tendency to say that it might be prudent. Because the amount of it would change the economics picture a lot. You're looking right now, you're consuming 25% of that PPA's life during a period that you don't need that capacity. It's a 20-year PPA. The first 5 years of it, you don't need it.
So it would seem to me there must be some equation that would answer this question. If the first 4 years it's not needed, so it's operating at a loss, but then it's a good project thereafter, but 20 years is not long enough of a period to make up for that first 4 years?
Well, it's only 15 years, first of all, remaining.
Well, okay, I meant the 20 total.
Yeah.
How long of an agreement would they need so that the good would outweigh the bad?
Good question, and I'm not certain I have an answer to it without looking at the law. I'm going to take a step back. The need for capacity right now is about 9 years from now. All right. It's 5 years into the PPA, but it's 9 years from now. That is a long planning horizon today. I would say that if it were my client, I would recommend they hold off for another 5 years before they pull the plug or before they pull the trigger.
Okay. Other questions? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Armstrong, redirect?
No, Your Honor.
Judge, I have more questions.
Can we go through the round first? Mr. Simpson?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Mr. Johnson?
Nothing further.
PSC staff?
Nothing from us, thanks.
All right, thank you, Commission.
I just have one as well.
All right.
is there any way to put together what kind of economic opportunity there is to sell this into the market? Where we've heard of two different numbers, but if my gut tells me that there'll be a market with other retiring in MISO that this is going to become something that's going to run all the time once it gets built because it's going to be needed somewhere in MISO. It's strictly on a gut and what I've seen in MISO.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be some way that you could take a best guess on that if I asked you to analyze that question.
A best guess without diving into the load forecast models and stuff like that would be a pure guess, Commissioner. And it's, you know, the analysis work that involved in that is time consuming and very detailed because you're looking at so many different parameters.
There's really no way to predict that, is there? MISO forecast every year they go up and down, and every quarter they go up and down, and so it seems like it's a hedge against things inside of MISO that'll be to protect Excel as well as offer opportunity that when this gets bid in that somebody will buy it. And they could be buying it at a cost much more than what it actually would get bid in for.
That could be. And at the same time, it could be the other way. And we've seen that. We've seen that right now. I mean, you look at coal, all right? I've got clients with extremely high efficiency coal projects that are not running right now.
But wouldn't we know don't we have the number that shows the worst case scenario if we can't get any sales off of what it's going to cost us to own this resource? We have that number.
You do.
And so that would be the quote-unquote the worst case scenario.
That is correct.
So would there be, I mean, if it's you and I sitting in a room and I'm the head of Excel, I don't want the job, all right? and I ask you that question, I mean, there's got to be something other than just we're not sure. I mean, based on historic, there's got to be a way that smart guys like you can figure that out.
The question you're asking is one that one has to be careful about how you project on something like this. One of the questions I have is if Xcel is so confident that this can be sold in the marketplace, why not consider coming to you folks and saying, okay, we want to start cost recovery in 2024 and we'll just sell it in the marketplace until then.
Fair enough.
All right. And you know, if that's clearly an option, but right now what I see them doing is saying, okay, we think it might be sellable in the marketplace, but we're not certain, but we're going to ask for you guys to roll it into rate base so that we're covered.
Have you ever seen a hybrid approach where we tell Xcel, hey, we'll give you rate recovery when you need it in 20, whatever we decide that number is, 2020, or later?
Actually, I have. I was involved with a situation in Michigan when I worked for Consumers Energy in which we had taken a nuclear plant and converted it to a gas combined cycle project. We didn't need that capacity right away, and the commission told us that we could only incorporate half the facility into rate base. And then about 5 years later, when we had been selling portions of it into the open market from a variety of perspectives, and 5 years later, we went back to the commission to ask for permission for us to engage in a long-term PPA with another entity, and ended up with a settlement in which they allowed us to roll it into rate base.
Sure, and if they would make more money in that period, they should be able to keep it.
Right.
Thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
Can you go to page 23 of your direct testimony? That table on the bottom, is this, how did the changes from Mr. Johnson affect this final number?
The
proportional costs of ratepayers.
This is where I would refer to Mr. Johnson's table, because what he's done is essentially made the corrections to the assumption I had misinterpreted in terms of their overall avoided cost numbers.
And this, I don't believe this is trade secret. To say
Mr. Johnson's tables are, I believe, depending on which ones you're referring to. Mr.
I don't want to talk about the table. I just want to I want to know what that final number is. North Dakota ratepayer 2019-2024 proportional cost.
No, that $12 million number is not trade secret.
Okay, so, and then the comparable one for Mr. Johnson?
Was that the
it's
$6
million?
$6.2 million, and you agreed with that? Okay. But you didn't analyze that.
$6.2 million, that's a levelized cost over that period of time. So it's actually it's the equivalent of an annual cost.
You did not consider that over the life of the 20-year contract, though?
No. I was strictly looking at the period for when they did indicate they didn't need the capacity.
Did the company provide that for the life of the 20-year contract? Okay. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Christman? Questions. Any further redirect, Mr. Armstrong?
No.
All right. Thank you very much. I think you're excused.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further witnesses, Mr. Armstrong?
No, Your Honor.
Your Honor, I had a question I'd like to throw out to maybe to Zev, or just as we get close, I'm guessing, to wrap this up. You heard the line of question I asked the witness. Could Xcel provide something to give us your best guess of what you think the sales are available, or is it somewhere in the record that I can point to? And I don't understand, it's just a guess. But you've got some pretty good data that you're trying to look at.
I'm sure we can put something together for a late-filed exhibit, Commissioner. There is nothing in the record. Generally, that capacity credit represents some type of value for that And as Mr. Johnson testified, we have the record does reflect the bookends with right. our full value and with no value.
Understood.
And frankly, it's somewhere in between. The record also reflects, you know, certainly Calpine thinks that there's value in a market for
maybe
that.
A table that shows this is what you get from mice, so this is what you'd make on this kind of sales, and something to give us something to look at.
We'll do our best to put something together.
Okay. Does that sound reasonable, Lana? What I'm trying to.
I apologize, but someone was asking me a question about trade secret materials. So could you just summarize what you agreed to, so I can?
I'll let Zev summarize.
Sure. Essentially, we'll put together a late filed exhibit that will essentially provide our best guess at the potential for a market for this excess capacity from that period.
Okay. Sounds good to me. Thank you.
Would there be, Commissioner, just to, in the event that advocacy staff disagreed with that, we really should have an opportunity to...
Oh, no, absolutely. I think that's got to be...
Supplement
the, absolutely.
What I would actually propose, Mitch, is we'll present you with a draft and you guys can comment. And want, I think it's better for the commission to have something that we can both agree on.
Absolutely, yeah. That
represents reality.
Thank you.
Or disagree on. And then maybe if you want to submit your own point, I have no problem with that either.
I think Mr. Simpson and I can work it out.
Yeah.
As I indicated when we discussed the hearing procedure at the conclusion of the PSC Advocacy's staff's case, I would provide an opportunity for rebuttal evidence. And so I would ask, Mr. Simpson, is there any need for rebuttal?
I don't believe there's any need, no, Your Honor.
Mr. Johnson?
No, Your Honor.
And Mr. Armstrong?
No, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you. I also said I would give an opportunity for a public input. I don't see anybody here. Is there anybody here that would like to provide some public input? Well, seeing none, then we'll commence with wrapping up our proceedings for today. Is there any other matter which anyone wishes to bring to the attention of the commission or myself here before we conclude? No, seeing none, I have a couple I guess housekeeping things to discuss. Is there a need for closing arguments today, Mr. Simpson?
We can wrap up briefly, yes.
Okay. Before we do that, I want to ask, is there any need for written briefs, Mr. Simpson?
Your Honor, I'm not seeing any today unless there are any issues that the commission or staff would like us to brief.
Nothing from the staff?
Nothing I can think of.
Okay. All right. And then in past proceedings, there's been a request for proposed findings of fact, conclusions of law, and a recommended order. Staff, is that something that you'd like to see again?
Yes, please.
Okay. Very good. Mr. Simpson?
We're happy to provide that.
All right. Thank you. With that, I just want to review a little bit what I have written down for late filed exhibits. I do have something referred to as an adequacy report. Does that ring a bell? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So that's one of the late filed exhibits that we would expect. Also, a late filed exhibit with regard, a supplement with regard to air quality. Does that
We believe
ring
that
a
should
bell?
Be coming from Calpine.
The exact discharge number?
The CO2 emissions, yes.
All right. And then the last late filed exhibit that Mr. Simpson, that you discussed with regard to the market for excess capacity.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And so those are the three late filed exhibits, and also with the opportunity for PSC advocacy staff to respond to those exhibits. All right. If there's nothing else, then I guess I would certainly entertain closing arguments on the commission's behalf, and then after that, we'll allow closing comments from the commission. So, Mr. Simpson, if you'd like to start.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll be very, very brief. We've had a long day, but I think a very healthy discussion today. I don't think there's any fundamental debate as to the facts on the record or what the ask is at this point in time. You know, fundamentally, there's a resource available for NSP to take. Its timing is less than ideal, but its price is better than good. And so at the end of the day, the company truly believes it's prudent to take this resource at this excellent pricing in anticipation of future needs, especially given all the uncertainty that lays before the company in the coming years, to take combined cycle capacity in the face of in the face of an aging baseload fleet just plainly makes sense from a liability perspective, and to take that combined cycle capacity at essentially combustion turbine pricing as a bridge resource, we think is fundamentally prudent, and we ask that you grant our request for an advance determination of prudence.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson, any closing comments?
Your Honor, just to briefly echo Mr. Simpson's closing arguments, we do believe that this is a unique opportunity, that the value of this opportunity does exist, and it outweighs the unfortunate timing and the needs for demand. But we do believe that the value is there, and it's in the best interest of the ratepayers of the state of North Dakota in order to adopt this ADP.
Thank you. Mr. Armstrong.
Thank you, and I will try to also be brief, but I probably have more to respond to than the other ones. We have kind of three issues that the Commission's heard about today, and one is need, one is timing, and one is price. There's really no dispute that the earliest this capacity is needed is 2023. I would mention that date only comes from the early retirement of Sherco 2, which is basically a result of partially this project and was just proposed in an October 2nd filing. I think it's safe to say that October 2nd filing is probably going to change. It changed fairly drastically from January 2015 to October 2015. I don't think that filing is, as much as it's changed, much to rely on. I think what really should be looked at is the earliest the company says it needs this capacity without the closing of Sherco 2 is 2024. This isn't a bridge where they need a little bit of it now, but they don't need all of it. They don't need any of it until 2024. And that's in order to be at the MISO 7.1% reserve margin area. There's plenty of reserve built into the system. So that is 9 years from now, 8 or 9 years from today. They have time to evaluate all these things that they claim are high uncertainties. And I'll be frank, I think the company tends to overstate the level of uncertainty with these things. But if the power plan things are so uncertain and MISO is so uncertain, why not wait 3 years and let some of those uncertainties work themselves out and bring a project that's going to go into production closer to when the customers need it and will be paying for it? That would be more prudent in advocacy staff's position. So we think this project is too early, doesn't satisfy a need for too far out, and if the price is so good, I still question why Calpine is here advocating to sell its product for such a low price. I don't think there's really been, and I also think it's overstated the chance that somebody else is going to step in to this project instead of NSP. Overall, I think what will end up happening here if this project is deemed prudent is North Dakota customers will pay for it for at least 5 years when it's not needed. They'll actually pay more because Sherco 2 will be shut down earlier, which is a low-cost generation, and they'll still be paying some for Sherco while they pay for this. We don't think that's prudent. We think there's better time to plan this out for something that's better for the North Dakota customer, and ask that the Commission deny the application. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Simpson, you do have the burden, and so you can have the last word if you have anything to add.
Oh, thank you, Your Honor. I think Mr. Armstrong really laid the case out as to a very simplistic view of resource planning and without enough regard for how good the deal is. And I don't think Calpine's presence here today really should weigh that in. The fundamental here is that it's combined cycle capacity that we're adding to the system in the face of uncertainty, however under or overstated that might be, at great pricing when we will have a need for it during the contract term, and it just makes sense to go do. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And now I would ask for closing comments from the Commission. Commissioner Koch.
Oh, thank you, Your Honor. The Well, first off, thank Chris and your crew for the work today, and Mitch and Mike and Richard, thank you as well, and Calpine. For Richard, we didn't get a chance to talk before the hearing. I guess it's not about the case, of course, but we get a lot of folks coming in here as experts. I appreciate you the time and testimony you put together. It was very good. So I look forward to maybe seeing you again down the road in these things. And for the group, these are the hearings that I like. Nobody coming in saying, I love everybody and let's approve it. I mean, this is good. You make a case that you feel is very good. Mitch, your arguments are very strong. And the three of us have a decision to make. And I will tell that, you know, Excel, it's at this point in the solar cases, I didn't have a lot of thought-provoking ideas. I knew where I was going. And but this is a whole new – well, I don't think that's a surprise either, right? But this is a whole different set of facts we're dealing with RTOs, what's available in the market, what opportunities might be there. I'm always harping about big building stuff bigger, getting base load in the grid, so that's something to be weighed. But also, too, Mr. Armstrong's point about, well, this is going to cost a whole bunch of money early that maybe we don't need. So this will be another one of those first work sessions that we'll have. We'll get scheduled pretty quick, but whatever happens, I think everybody's committed to keeping the lights on, and that's what really the last, Richard, you talked about, you don't have concerns about integrating renewables and peakers, so that's interesting perspective, but I do have concerns about not having some of that out there. But anyway, enough opining. Thank you all for your work, and we'll get this scheduled pretty quick.
All right. I'll just echo what he said. thanks for everything. Great information from all sides. Listening to Zeb give his closing comments, I'm going, yep, sounds good. Then I listen to Mitch, I'm like, oh, yeah, Mitch might be right. so I guess I'm squarely in the middle, and we'll still be weeding through this, trying to determine what's the most prudent path for North Dakota customers. So thanks for all the good information and dialogue, and look forward to coming to terms with this at some point here in the next month or two.
Commissioner Christman?
Well, Julie just pointed out the value of the last word, and here I finally have it, and it's the one time or one of the rare times when I don't have a strong position. But a couple of thoughts, and I'll start with the negative because I like ending on a positive note. I continue to have some frustrations with NSP at times, and this case partially is one of them. You know, we talk about advanced planning, and sometimes I think that the resource plans that we get from NSP should end with, unless the Minnesota PUC changes our mind, because I don't know that they're worth very much. It just seems like they change at the whim of one state utility commission. But the positive here is, you know, as Brian mentioned, I too have preached that utility companies need to think further out than a year or two and go big and go long on some of this stuff if we're going to have good systems for the long term. And so clearly this is a project where you're going big, so I appreciate that and would commend the company for that. Now the question is, you know, nothing is good in extremes, and so is this too big or too long? And the company has presented some good evidence, and I really feel that advocacy staff has as well, and so it's going to take some evaluating, but keep in mind what I told you about the planning and changing minds all the time, but also the part about that I do appreciate thinking further than building the next wind farm so we can get through 6 months from now.
Nothing further. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much, everybody. Thank you for a smooth hearing. And commissioners, thank you for the opportunity to preside today. And we'll close the hearing, and it's 3:30 p.m. Central Time. Thank you.